the four simplex. Okay, so this is elementary cell in the theory, and it is useful to understand topology of this four simplex, and the boundary of this four simplex is three dimension. It's a four dimensional manifold, so boundary is three dimensional, and the boundary of the four simplex is built by five tetrahedral. Okay, and this is background independent, and for non-perturbative, it means that we are going to construct the full transition amplitude of quantum gravity instead of doing perturbative expansion. Okay, so this is something called spin form amplitude that we are going to work with. And so this is a general scheme of the spin form amplitude, and it can be factorized into a phase amplitude, what I call A at F. This is amplitude associated with triangle in this triangulation, and also the tetrahedron amplitude AE, the amplitude associated to each tetrahedron E, and then more importantly, this vertex amplitude and the amplitude associated to each four simplex. And we are going to summing over all the intermediate states, and it's labeled by J and I. So these are the intermediate states, which are spin network states in quantum gravity. So J means spin, and I means intertwiner or invariant tensor of SU2. Okay, so this is the general scheme. You may wonder how they can be constructed in practice. All right, so here I'm going to give you a schematic introduction of the construction. So let's take the starting point is Pilibansky-Host theory of general relativity. So at this moment, I'm going to just remove the cosmological constant term of the theory. I'm going to talk about it in a moment because cosmological constant is the main part of the talk. So let's first forget about cosmological constant. And this is the BF theory and plus another term, phi BB. And this phi is the Lagrangian multiplier. It satisfies the traceless condition. And B is SL2C value 2 form, and this F is the curvature of SL2C connection A. Okay, and then you can integrate out this Lagrangian multiplier, because action is linear to that, and you get this constraint equation, what we call the simplicity constraint, and this constraint just tells that this B is related to the space-time tetrad. B equals plus minus E by E. And this is what we call simplicity constraint. And then once you plug back the solution of the constraint back into the action, okay, and the it reduces the Pilibansky-Host theory to general relativity in tetrad and connection formulation. Right? And then we if we quantize this theory formally, okay, and we write down the path integral, again, we integrate out this phi, we get a delta function of simplicity constraint, and the rest of the part is just exponential of BF theory. Okay, so we understand the quantization of Pilibansky-Host theory is the constrained BF theory. Okay, so far very easy. And then instead of this formal path integral quantization, we are going to do a different quantization, what we call spin form quantization. Yeah, these are these steps. So firstly, we adapt this path integral into the triangulation, and let this B4, this four manifolds to be just a single four simplex. Okay. And the partition function above should give the spin form vertex amplitude, or the four simplex amplitude. And this vertex amplitude should determine the local dynamics of loop quantum gravity. All right, and the way to do the quantization is we first quantize the BF theory because this is easy. We first forget about the simplicity constraint and just do quantization of BF theory and integrate out B, you just get the delta function of F. And this integral is easy to study, and it's just a topological, a simple topological field theory. Right. And then after quantizing BF theory, we are going to quantize. We quantize the simplicity constraint and impose operator constraint to the BF theory. That's a feature of spin form quantization. Right. And in the end, so there is a popular spin form model so far that many people work on. Is so-called EPRL-FK model, and this is it corresponds a specific way to quantize the simplicity constraint and impose the simplicity constraint to the BF theory. And the important part is that the simplicity constraint results in a Y map. So this is the most important ingredient: is that this Y map is the embedding map from a four-valent SU2 invariant tensor or intertwiner into the space of four-valent SL2C invariant tensor. I call Y of little I. And in loop quantum gravity, this four-valent SU2 invariant tensor is a quantum tetrahedron. It describes the quantum geometry of tetrahedron, and each of these tetrahedron are one. Each of the tetrahedron is one of the SU2 invariant tensor. So each of these is a tetrahedron over there, and this is the quantum tetrahedron in spin network states.
So can I ask for a little clarification? When I read the blue text, I see some kind of an algebraic statement, but you explained its meaning with reference to quantum tetrahedra. Could you also just first for me explain it, just write down the tensor map that Y represents?
You mean,
what is the invariant tensor you're talking about on the left, and what is the invariant tensor you're talking about on the right?
So you mean just invariant, just the definition of invariant tensor? So this is you can consider a tensor product. I mean, this is four valent, so it's the irreducible representation of SU2, J1 tensor, J4.
But I mean, it has four spinner indices.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, and the only invariant thing I can form is from an epsilon AB.
And then you just J1 plus J4 Hackdown state in this Hilbert space equals to zero. So this is the invariant tensor. So zero angular momentum state. Oh, can you see? So you just consider four angular momentums, and you look at the state.
This is scheme.
Yeah, arbitrary. Yeah, it's arbitrary spin. You just consider four angular momentum with arbitrary spin, and the state is zero total angular momentum. That's the invariant tensor.
I still don't understand. Is it a tensor valued in the tensor product of four copies of C2?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
No, can you just write it in terms of epsilon AB?
Not C2.
No. No, not C2. It's higher dimensional. It's arbitrary spin. The arbitrary irreducible representation.
Tensor product of, so for every choice of four representations.
That's right. That's right.
There's a unique Y map that maps it into a product of four.
It's not unique. There's a specific one.
Yeah,
you want to know the details?
The model gives you.
Yeah, the model give one. Yeah. Give one preferred.
I see.
There are subtleties, but if you want, I can give you a formula.
Are you showing what the map is, or will you just
speak? No, this is a background introduction. If you want to know detail, I can show you the details. But this is not the main part of the talk.
Maybe the idea is the map is so okay. It's good. You map these simplicity constraints, and the simplicity constraint at the level of the SL2C representation. So at the level of SL2C representation, you have a boost generator and a rotation generator, and you can understand that the simplicity constraint essentially is saying that the boost generator is proportional to the rotation generator, with this proportionality coefficient being the parameter, and then you do a bit of algebra, so some class constraints, and you derive this intertwiner from
this is derived from specific quantization of simplicity constraint. Okay, is there any other question? Okay, so here this is a quantum tetrahedron in space time in spatial slice of for the spin network states, and then after the Y map, what you get is a boosted quantum tetrahedron, and then this boosted quantum tetrahedron is going to glued to form a four simplex quantum mechanically, and this gluing is given by this contraction of these five invariant tensors in SO2C. I just call it a trace, and the result is a number which is the vertex amplitude. If you give me the representation and intertwine, okay, and then you just fit this vertex amplitude in the general scheme of the spin form amplitude. Okay, so there are all the vertex amplitudes for all the four simplices. You make a product of all the four simplices, and make product of all the triangles, and the phase amplitude you choose to be dimension of the representation, and summing over all the states, spin and intertwiners, and this is the full spin form amplitude. Okay, and this is the outline of the very quick outline of the construction. And the So one, the amplitude you get really is nice, has nice properties, especially it has a nice semi-classical behavior. There's a semi-classical consistency. There has been many development in recent years on the semi-classical analysis of the amplitude. And the result is indeed recover. In many examples, it recovers discrete gravity dynamics in the semi-classical large J regime.
Sorry, can I ask a neat question? So this is four-dimensional or three-dimensional gravity?
So four-dimensional. So I'm in this talk, I always work on three plus one dimensions.
But the tetrahedrons are three-dimensional.
Yeah, that's why it is glued into four simplex. Four simplex is four-dimensional.
Okay, and where spin variables are living on? They're living on faces?
Of on the boundary, yes. On the boundary
faces
of the book. That's right. Yeah, yes, okay. That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Okay. All right, the first example of semi-classical consistency was given by John Barrett and also Laurent and Florian Corradi. Okay, and it shows that the large J asymptotics of vertex amplitude gives two phases, where on the exponential are precisely four-dimensional regi action of the four simplex, of the flat four simplex with no cosmological constant. Right, and then this is just a single four simplex. If you glue the four simplex into a large triangulation, you can work with larger triangulations, and they are, and then you have to do numerics to compute the semi-classical limit. And in the end, what we show by numerics is that you indeed recover a semi-classical discrete gravity, especially at the dynamical level. Namely, you get Einstein equation. You really get Einstein equation on larger four-dimensional simplicial complex. So here, this is plot just showing the consistency of the action from spin foam and the regi action. Okay, so you see this curve really coincide. All right, so these are for the model with no cosmological constant. So let's come to obviously it is well motivated because there is cosmological constant in this world. Observation shows that there is a positive cosmological constant, what we call dark energy, in our universe. And so the Einstein equation should have cosmological constant term. All right, so which means that the formulation of loop quantum gravity need to include cosmological constant. So this is one of the important motivation, of course. And then in loop quantum gravity, our idea is to treat these bare cosmological constant as a fundamental parameter of the theory. Yeah, so this theory has two parameters. One is cosmological constant, the other one is Weber Emitz parameter. And it means that the spin foam amplitude that I introduced before should also depend on the cosmological constant. All those amplitudes should depend on the cosmological constant. And more importantly, the cosmological constant also should appear in the sum. It should give a cutoff of the sum over the states, right? Because the EPIL-FK model has infrared divergence in some cases because of the sum over spin is unbounded from above. The amplitude I just showed before has certain divergence when J goes to large. Okay. And what is expect, and indeed it is the case, that this cosmological constant lambda provides a natural infrared cutoff of the state sum and actually make the amplitude finite. So this is the idea of including cosmological constant. One of the important
positive cosmological constant. Or
so sorry. So it has to be positive. The sign. Well, in the end, it can be both. The result we have is both. You can have both. Yes, actually, it's on this slide.
It's only for positive, you expect a cutoff, an infrared cutoff, right?
No, both. So it doesn't depend on it. The cutoff depends on the absolute value of the cosmological constant. You will see why in a couple of slides. Okay, so now this is a brief history summarizing the development in this business. Okay, so of course, the starting point is three-dimensional gravity. All this expectation came from from the experience of three-dimensional gravity with quantum SU2 group and with Q root of unity, and this is called Turiyev-Virov model. And this model has two important features, nice features that we want. is firstly, it is finite. It is topological invariant. It's because the for quantum group, quantum SU2, Q root of unity, there's only finite number of representations. Yeah, there's a cutoff J. So the spin sum is cut off by the cosmological constant. Yeah, so the model is finite. And secondly, it's semi-classical consistent because this model can recover three-dimensional Regge calculus with positive cosmological constant in the large J regime. Okay? And so this model gives us the lesson that this cosmological constant should regularize the quantum group, the quantum gravity model.
Okay. Is it also true if it's Lorentzian? I mean, I know we are thinking in the case.
Yes, so I mean, this is.
It's not finite, right?
Yeah, for the Lorentzian, probably it's not. Yeah.
But in the Euclidean case, in the right, if it's lambda is negative. In case
that's right. Yeah, that's I'm here. I'm what I'm specifically talking about this Kuravero model. Yes. Okay. So in four-dimensional gravity, yeah. So I mean, then one should generalize this story to four-dimensional gravity. Try to find a four-dimensional analog of Kuravero model. Okay. So one of the immediate guess is one should use quantum Lorentz group because Lorentz group is four-dimensional, the gauge group of four-dimensional gravity. Yeah, indeed, you can do that. You use a quantum Lorentz group to design a spinful model for four-dimensional gravity, and this has been done in these works. And the result of these models are all finite. Yeah, you will always get finite model.
It was done much earlier by Newton.
Sorry?
We can talk later about the history.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yes, sure. Sure. Here, indeed, you did a lot of work on the quantum group aspect. So I'm trying to summarize the specific spin form. Right. But indeed, yes, I should mention that. Yes. Indeed, yeah, I'm Lee have done right, and yes, there was a lot of work, huge bunch of works, like beginning of 2000, I guess. Right, 1990s, yes, on QD form, loop quantum gravity with Q root of unity.
Could you say, what do you mean with the models are all finite? Is it a finite number of labels, or is it?
Yeah, the amplitude are all finite, okay. Divergent free.
In your picture, I'm not so familiar, where is the gravity? Of four dimension, like in the mathematical structure you're describing?
Graviton?
Yeah. I mean, where it appears when you take the...
Oh, where it appears? Yeah, yeah, where it appears? Yes, in the equation, in the semi-classical equation of motion. So there was, here, right? And these are the effective action of spin form, and graviton in principle should appear here. Yeah, because the equation of motion from that is just, it's very much similar to Regge equation of motion, and Regge you can use discrete gravity to describe graviton,
okay,
as well,
yeah.
Right? And so it's very similar
it's
here.
Limits, I guess that's, what
that's right. I mean, you need to require your wavelength of your graviton is smaller than the curvature,
okay,
radius. Yeah. Sorry, longer. Yes, yeah, smaller than the curvature.
Yeah, but is it possible to somehow insert operator of creation of graviton there?
Sorry?
Is it somehow possible to insert under correlation function operator of creation of graviton?
Yes.
Operator, yeah. Right. Yes. And you see, these are just like path integral, right? And you have operators that you can make insertions and compute correlation functions. And there was, I didn't cite it here, but there was calculation on graviton propagators. In this spin form calculation, and so there are calculation of graviton propagators in the spin form formalism, and indeed it's like you put in insertions of a metric, Penrose metric operators, and do the calculation like that. So what's that?
That can be interpreted as graviton propagator only in semi-classical limit, right?
Yeah, right. And you talk about graviton, that means semi-classical,
yeah.
Right?
Could you say something about the quantum Lorentz group? I've never heard
of that. Oh, quantum Lorentz group is a quantum double of quantum SU2 with Q real. So basically, it's a tensor product, and it's a tensor product between quantum SU2 with Q real. It means Q real. It means it's a compact quantum group. It's a Volonovich, the compact quantum group.
How is it distinct and, from quantum SO4?
Quantum SO4. Yeah, quantum SO4 is a compact. Quantum SO4 is just two copies of quantum SU2.
Yeah, and what's quantum
right.
Lorentz?
Quantum Lorentz is quantum SU2 tensor product is dual.
Tensor product what?
It's dual. It's the dual quantum group. Dual Hopf algebra.
Group.
Yeah.
Group.
Yeah,
it's
so
quantum.
Quantum double.
What is the quantum?
Yeah, that's right.
What is the dual of quantum SU2?
Quantum SU2, so you can
sequence that one. Yeah.
Right, so you can have UQ SU2. So these are.
Can you write it much larger, please?
Oh.
Maybe you can write on
yes.
this side.
On this side.
Yeah.
So UQ SU2. So these are generated the universal the QD form universal enveloping algebra of those J's, J plus minus and J3 and satisfy the commutation. Yeah, the deformed commutation relation. So here Q is real. So it's actually from 0 to 1. And then you have the SU2Q. So this is the functions, the dual of this algebra, and which means the functions, the polynomial functions of FSU2, and these are generated by A, B, C, D. That's a matrix element. They are polynomial functions of SU2, but with, for example, A times B equals Q, B times A, with non-commutative.
Sorry, the part that I didn't understand is what is the dual? I mean, if there's SU2 itself, it's not,
it's a functional.
It's not conjugate.
It's in the usual sense of linear algebra, right?
Yeah. So this is the function of that.
You can also say that's like Laurent is saying, this is SU2 and the boost, you make the boost like a group. It's called AN, AN2, and these UQ are basically the functions over this group. So it's a function over the boost. You know, SU2Q, that's a function over SU2, and then the other guys are the functions over the boost.
But, I mean, boosts don't form a linear space.
That's right. So it's not a boost, it's a
component. Can you write the classical Iwasawa decomposition? So there's a decomposition of the Lorentz boost in terms of two subgroups. SU2 times AN, right?
Well, maybe we're getting too far.
If you don't take the boost, you take the non-numerators, they form a subgroup of Lorentz, and that's really the thing that goes through the quantum deformation. Does that help?
Hmm.
I can write a general matrix as a product of the rotation unitary times something which is upper diagonal.
Okay.
Yeah. The Lorentz case, you have the Cartan decomposition or the Iwasawa decomposition. Cartan would be when you have a rotation and a boost, and Iwasawa decomposition is when you have an AN and rotation.
And then the duality is some kind of geometry. So UQ SU2 is like the space of vector field, right? It's the derivation. And then you have the space of function, which is dual to a derivative. And the product is that you take the function, you apply the derivative operator, and you evaluate at the identity. And it don't go through the QD formation. I mean, a lot of that. But it's.
OK, anyway, so although we discussed quite a lot about it, but what I'm going to say is this is probably wrong. This model probably doesn't give the right answer. And of course, these models are all finite, but as it first appears, that the semi-classical limit of these models are very difficult to extract, right? And at least right now, I'm suspect that probably it's not going to be right as well. And because, I mean, it's not, it's hard to extract because it involves a lot of Q-deformed 3NJ symbols and analytic continued, and that's why it is hard to compute. All right, and then after that, we switch from quantum group to something correct. And so here, we developed in 2014 to 2015, we developed the spinform model of four-dimensional gravity with cosmological constant. We are confident that it is the model with cosmological constant because it gives the right semi-classical limit. Yeah. So this model is using, instead of quantum group, but SL2C Chan-Simon theory on the boundary of the four simplex. We define the vertex amplitude on the four simplex, and then this Chan-Simon theory is living on the boundary. I'm going to talk more, I'm going to tell you why is that in a moment. And then this model, the semi-classical limit is really nice. It's reproduced Regic calculus with cosmological constant, positive or negative. But the finiteness of this model is not manifest. Yeah. I'm also going to tell you why in a moment. I'm basically, the reason is that this model is based on a formal path integral. Right. And but this talk, I'm going to introduce the improved model of body gravity with cosmological constant. This is my work in 2021.
The main reason that introducing quantum group can lead to cosmological constant.
What is the reason?
What is the main reason why quantum group leads to cosmological constant?
So because there's a one parameter. As I said, don't believe this. Don't believe this. And in general, I guess your question is why you expect the cosmological constant from quantum group, right? So I mean, the lesson is come from 3D gravity, and then you introduce certain parameter. It should set and also preserve some symmetry, right? And including Lorentz symmetry, and then this parameter should go somewhere in the semi-classical limit, then probably. probably cosmological constant. That's the idea of this work, actually.
But if you set up Chan-Simon theory as the boundary, mm-hmm. the relationship between the level of the Chan-Simon theory and the boundary and the cosmological constant,
that's right.
is at the level of the classical theory, lambda is k over 6 pi.
Yes, so I'm going to show you the formula, yes.
You're asking why? Why should you? I think it's a fair question. Why should believe that? Right. That's the question.
Right. Okay. Yes. Yes.
I mean, maybe
yes,
explain a little bit because
that's right. I'm going to explain. Yeah. I'm going to explain how this
is. I mean, one explanation at least. It's not for general, but I mean, there's the Kodama state construction. So there.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. There's a continuum construction of one state, but it's only the vacuum state, which is kind of naturally linked to SL2C. I don't think that you're going to use that, but it should be connected.
Yeah, it's probably related. Probably related. It's interesting to see the relation. Right. Yes. So I'm. The punchline is that we here is that I'm using Chan-Simon theory instead of quantum group, is turns out to be the better way to describe the model.
But if you use Chan-Simon theory, don't you have to smear out the, if you're making quantum Chan-Simon theory, you have to extend the loops so you can take into account the lack of parity. So you have to change the algebra right after you release the quantum
But the thing is that the reason why I say quantum group is this is probably not a good idea because the Chan-Simon theory we get in the next slide doesn't have a quantum group correspondence. There is only certain SL2C Chan-Simon theory has quantum group correspondence, not all, and we are in the regime that those that they doesn't, yeah. Because we have Barberini's prime. That's the reason. All right, so I think we should go to the next slide. Okay, so why we have Chan-Simon theory on the boundary? Now we turn on the cosmological constant term. Okay, and again, our logic is Plibanski formulation of GR. Body gravity is BF theory plus simplicity constraint. Yeah. So now we put cosmological constant term in the BF theory. Yeah. Again, B is a two-form, and F is SL2C connection, and gamma is Bayh-Barre image parameter. And the simplicity constraint tells that B is plus minus E by G, and relate B to cotetrad E. And if we plug this simplicity constraint back in the action, we get just the host action of gravity plus cosmological constant term. Okay, so here, but in this action, I only need to put an absolute value of cosmological constant term, because there's a plus minus in the solution of simplicity constraint. This plus minus determines the plus minus sign of cosmological constant term.
Okay. Is there a reason why you the combination of B and B dual that appears in the cosmological constant term
yeah.
has to be the same as the one in the other term?
That's right. Yeah. What next slide. Reason? Yeah, next slide is coming. This is important. Yeah, that's a very good question. Next slide. That's important. Okay, and then the variation of this action, you just get Einstein-Hubble action. This is well known. Sorry, you get Einstein equation. It is well known. All right, so this equation answers your question that, okay, so if you do variation with respect to B, the equation you get is this equation, and there's no twist in between. And this equation will be very useful. Yeah, there's no twist. Okay. All right, so now we just follow the general procedure to construct spinform amplitude out of that. Okay, and firstly, again, we need to quantize the BF theory. Yeah, remember, the spinform quantization is that we first quantize BF theory, then impose simplicity constraint quantum mechanically. Yeah. So first, quantize the BF theory, and this is the BF theory now with the cosmological constant term. Okay. Now, when there is a cosmological constant term, I integrate out B, and put it in the path integral and integrate out B. Okay, so it's not anymore a delta function of F. Right? But we have to, this is a Gaussian integral. Yeah, and we have to carry out the Gaussian integral. And the Gaussian integral is just on shell. I mean, you know, Gaussian integral localized. And taking Gaussian integral is the same as first getting equation of motion, then plug back in the equation of motion. Okay, and this is integral B, you will get this equation. And this equation relates the B field to the curvature of the connection. Okay. And this equation is very important. Why? Because in the end, we are going to impose simplicity constraint. Okay. But we have integrated out B. How are we going to impose simplicity constraint on B? Okay. But this equation tells that B relates to F. So putting simplicity constraint on B is the same as putting simplicity constraint on F. Okay. So in the end, we are going to just putting simplicity constraint imposing simplicity constraint on the connection. Now, once we carry out this Gaussian integral, and let's give, okay, so this Gaussian integral integrate out B, yeah, and what you get is F wedge F, okay, and this F wedge F is just, this term is just a total derivative, and you just get a boundary term, and the boundary term is just a Chern-Simon theory. Yeah, and this is a complex Chern-Simon theory because you have, it's because it's SL2C. It is SL2C, and the action is real. And they are the Chern-Simons level is complex. Now it's complex. I call T and T bar for the holomorphic and anti-holomorphic parts. And now this T relates to both cosmological constant and Bayh-Barre image parameter. And so as I said, there are two fundamental parameters in quantum gravity, cosmological constant and Bayh-Barre image parameter. And this Chern-Simons coupling T is just like a package and package out. Package this both cosmological constant and Bayh-Barre image parameter. Okay, and here, by the unitarity of the Chern-Simon theory, this k has to be an integer. I choose it to be positive integer, yeah? And because it relates to the absolute value of the cosmological constant. Yeah.
So
right.
The odd stem, the odd star, does not spoil the thing that it's. Chern-Simon? I thought that Chern-Simon was FF without the.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you decompose into self-dual and anti-self-dual part, you just get, you know, two FHF with this coupling. Right? Yes, that's why you have holomorphic and anti-holomorphic part. All right. Okay. So now, schematically, what we're going to do in the following is, okay, firstly, we need to quantize the Chern-Simon theory, making a rigorous quantization of the Chern-Simon theory and compute the partition function of Chern-Simon theory, and then impose the simplicity constraint to the quantum Chern-Simon theory. Okay, as I said, this equation is important because it translates the constraint on B to the constraint on the Chern-Simon's connection. Okay, and once we do this translation, we can impose the simplicity constraint quantum mechanically. Well, at least, there's a subtlety is that this simplicity constraint has first class part and also second class part. And here, first class and second class is according to the Chern-Simon's symplectic form. Okay, so first class constraint, as we know, they just the constraint algebra close, and the second class constraint is the constraint algebra do not close. So it gives some non-vanishing result on the constraint surface. Well, the scheme is that we should quantize the first class constraint and impose them strongly. Yeah, because they are first class, we are able to impose the constraint strongly to the Chern-Simon state. But second class constraint, we can't impose them strongly. We have to impose them weakly and to avoid anomaly in order to get a non-trivial Hilbert space. And the way we do it specifically for this work is we use coherent state. And so we just take coherent state, define some coherent state for Chern-Simon theory, and then those coherent state are picked at a classical value of the flat connection, and then we are going to impose the second class constraint on the coherent state label, and these are classical phase space points where this coherent state is picked.
Sorry, could you say again how you wound up with just a boundary action? What happened to the bulk path integral?
Oh, because the topology is very simple. The manifold we are working with just a single full simplex. The topology is just a topological is just a ball. Yeah? And then this term is just a total derivative, yeah, because locally this term is just a total derivative, and it only give a single boundary term, only give a boundary term, which is just the Chern-Simon. There's no bulk term.
Just because there's one simplex.
Yeah, so far we will.
If you had a larger bulk, it would be bulk.
Yes, and then in that case, we are going to, so here we are constructing a vertex amplitude, and for larger triangulation, we are going to just glue those vertex amplitudes.
Right.
It's just like usual spin form logic.
I mean, the BF action, you don't need a triangulation to talk about it, right? So I
right.
could imagine that as a continuum.
Right. That's right.
Reaction. And then are you saying that at that level, if you just had a 4D manifold with boundary, the action would be a pure boundary term?
No. So the point is that we are only work on a single full simplex. Because the simplicity constraint, we are going to impose simplicity constraint, right? The simplicity constraint is imposed piecewise on four simplices, right? So we can't do BF theory on the entire manifold. Yeah? So we can only do BF theory within the four simplex and then impose simplicity constraint on the boundary of the four simplex.
What you said was correct. If you take just BF amplitude from the full manifold,
yeah.
And what Moshin is saying, we don't want to just get BF, we want to get gravity.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
That's why you see it takes a four simplex and you impose the simplicity constraints only on the boundary of the four simplex.
Right, so I think I'm missing something that's implicit here. Like, are you assuming that the fields are constant on the four simplex or? Like what's special about taking a four simplex as opposed to any other chunk of space?
Yeah, think about the Regi calculus. So I mean, some logic behind this is we are thinking about the semi-classical limit to recover this classical GR, right? And what we expect this, and indeed it is case, that this will give relates to Regi calculus in the semi-classical regime. And in Regi calculus, within the four simplex, the field is constant. It's just flat, the usual ones. Yeah, it's just a flat four simplex. And the curvature of the spacetime is given by gluing many four simplices of different shapes, and you create deficit angle, yeah, and then this discrete curvature, right? And here is similar. So, in case of cosmological constant, the four simplex is not flat but constant curvature because there is a lambda. Yeah, so this is kind of intuition behind the spin form quantization. Okay, is any other question?
Yeah. Just a clarification question. I know for SO4, BF, and Plivansky, there are two solution sectors to the simplicity constraint.
Mm-hmm.
One gives the topological Hall's term again,
mm-hmm.
and the other one is the gravitational part.
Mm-hmm.
The gravitational mm-hmm. part is the one which has a Hochstuhl E wedge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So now we're talking about E wedge E, which actually is the topological one. So do you have
because
solution sector here?
All right. So here, because of there is this twist of Beverly Imids parameter, so both sectors are gravitational.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but in the end, you want to impose it's just a single sector, right? So, which means we only care about one. We choose one, E equals E by G plus minus.
Yeah. Sorry, it also seems like how it works that lambda to zero limit it's somehow. K goes to infinity, right?
That's right.
So it's like always quasi-classical limit, or there is no well-defined limit of zero cosmological constant.
There is. So okay. Your question is how it relates to semi-classical limit. Okay. So there's another parameter there will come in, which is representation spin.
Mm-hmm.
So we are doing loop quantum gravity. So all the time we talk about spin. There's a large J limit, which correlated with.
I'm asking something maybe more simple. So what is it, like how can I get to what you said before by lambda descending to zero? Or what I should do?
Relate to what I said, which one I said before?
Yeah.
The
like this, like tetrahedrons without the cosmological constant.
Okay, K equals to infinity, in principle.
Okay, so this is like quasi-classical limit for Chern-Simons.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's right. All right. So this is the scheme that we are going to use for imposing simplicity constraint. All right. So now let's come to the construction. So these are something concrete. Okay. So now let's look at a four simplex. So this is a four simplex. Okay. And we consider BF theory live in the bulk of the four simplex, and then by integral B. We get boundary Chern-Simons theory. So the boundary of the four simplex is a three sphere, okay, and triangulated by five tetrahedron. Okay. And therefore we have Chern-Simons theory live on the boundary, which is on the three sphere. But now we have the triangulation. We have tetrahedron. And we can draw the dual graph. Yeah. It's modified by drawing the dual graph of the triangulated boundary. So it has five nodes due to five tetrahedra and 10 links due to the due to the triangles, okay, because each link is a three-dimensional manifold, each link due to a triangle, okay, and then each node here is a tetrahedron, and there are four links at this node. Node means that the tetrahedron has four faces, okay, so this is a three sphere, this is the dual graph, okay. Now let's look at this key equation that I mentioned over and over again, and this equation means that the flux of B, yeah, and this B has to be non-vanishing because there's a geometry. It encodes the geometry. It relates to cotetrad. Yeah. The flux of B relates to the magnetic flux of Chern-Simons connection on the triangle. Okay. So this equation has to hold, right? And on this triangle, you have a flux of B. Geometrically, you have flux B, but which means that on this triangle, you should have magnetic flux of Chern-Simons theory. Okay. How to get this magnetic flux? Right. A simple way to get magnetic flux is to create defect by Ahnau-Bohm effect. Okay. And this motivates us to remove the dual graph and the tubular neighborhood from the sphere, from the three sphere, to create the flux. What we do is just draw this diagram in the three sphere and then remove the diagram and the tubular neighborhood. It creates a defect, and effectively it creates magnetic flux. And the resulting three manifold is what we call the graph complement three manifold, denoted by S3 removing gamma 5. And in knot theory, and many people, mathematicians and mathematical physicists, and doing knot theory, people study so-called knot complements by embedding a knot in the three sphere and then remove the knot to the tubular neighborhood. Yeah. Here is very much similar because we are just removing the graph.
So parity is relevant here, right?
Sorry?
Parity is relevant. You don't want to break parity.
Parity, yeah.
When you remove the cylinders from the embedding of the tetrahedra,
uh-huh.
in the boundary, then it matters that you keep the topology right here for what you're removing. It's not the dual, it's not the complement of an edge, of a one-dimensional edge, but the complement of a two-dimensional object.
Yeah. Yes, yes. That's why I say it's removing the tubular neighborhood. So in the end, here is a tube. So I'm going to talk about topology in I think next slide. I'm going to talk detail about the topology. Yeah. All right. So then this SL2C transimon theory, well, probably the slide after next slide. The SL2C transimon theory is actually defined on this graph complement spring manifold. All right. So then in the earlier work with Harald Haggard, Wojtek Kaminski and Aldo Rilo in 2014, what we had is a little bit different approach. Instead of removing the graph, we put in Wilson lines, which more or less equivalent. And we are defining the vertex amplitude of the to be the transimon theory on the entire three sphere, but we put in defect by putting in Wilson line operators. And so we have a Wilson graph living on this Wilson lines living on those curves. And making this as an insertion to the path integral. Okay, and then we define this vertex amplitude to be a formal path integral. Okay, and it turns out this is nice semi-classically because if we take spin large, because the Wilson lines depend on the representation label J, and if we take this J large and lambda small with J times lambda fixed, okay, we can use the stationary phase approximation to study this path integral. And what we get is precisely two phases, exponential of Reggie action, four-dimensional Reggie action with cosmological constant, and exponential of minus Reggie action with cosmological constant term. Yeah, so this indeed gives a semi-classically consistent result. However, this model has an important drawback, is that it's formal. It's formal because we use formal path integral to define this four simplex amplitude. So it's an infinite dimensional formal functional integral. So the finiteness is obscure. It's not clear about the finiteness. So now we are going to improve this by rigorously define transimon's partition function on that three manifold. Okay, so it's thanks to the earlier work by these people, where they study the transimon theory and relates to supersymmetric gauge theory. And over there, they can there is so-called state integral model or SL2C transimon theory. Because it is non-compact group, so it's not a state sum model, but state integral model. Okay. So I'm going to tell what is going on here. So by studying topological quantum field theory, an efficient way is to do the triangulation. Now we are going to triangulate this three manifold. Okay, and the quantum transimon theory is defined on a so-called ideal triangulation of this three manifold. Okay, and this triangulation, this three manifold can be decomposed by five ideal octahedra, and each of which is further decomposed into four ideal tetrahedra. Okay,
so by ideal vertex, they are on the graph. They are.
Yes. Yes. So by ideal means that those tetrahedra, the vertex of a tetrahedra, they are truncated, so which means those tetrahedra has big faces and small faces. Okay. Small faces are those truncated vertices, and big faces are the original face of the tetrahedra. Okay, so what we are going to do is glue those tetrahedra into octahedra and then glue octahedra through those big faces, okay, and leave the small faces open. And then the small faces will be triangulating the tunnel because you remove the curve. Okay? So to understand topology, you can view this is like a subway system. And each of the vertex, because you remove the vertex, you create a cavity. Yeah? And this cavity is like you dig to the ground, dig down to the ground, you create a subway station. Right? You have a substation under the ground. And then when you remove the line, you create a tunnel. You connect your subway station. Okay? So it's like this is a subway station connect to four tunnels. Yeah? And you can travel between the tunnel, goes from one station to the other. Yeah? So this is just like a subway system. Right? And then this this triangulation, just when you glue through the big faces, you just build the space outside your subway system. And those small faces are just triangulating the tunnel between the subway system, right? And also, each of your subway station corresponding to a cavity. Yeah? And the boundary of this cavity is a four-hole sphere. It's a sphere, but with four holes, because you have four tunnels connecting to this subway station. Okay, so this is very important. And each of the vertex here corresponds to a four-hole sphere. All right, so now once we do this triangulation, we just need to consider the partition function on elementary block and then glue them, right? It is known that the partition function, the Chern-Simons partition function on this ideal tetrahedron is called a quantum dilogarithm. It's a quantum dilog function given by this. It depends on some parameters, z, z, and z twiddle. They are parametrizing the flat connections on the boundary of this ideal tetrahedron. Yeah, so here I list all the parameters here, and it relates to Q and Q twiddle. They relate to the Chern-Simons coupling T and T bar. Okay, and here there's a B parameter, which often used in supersymmetric gauge theory. And this this B is just relates to the Weber-Yiemes parameter. Yeah, and here the variables we are going to use is mu and m. Mu is a continuous variable, and m is a discrete variable. It's integer up to k.
So, Hoshin, again, asking about the ideal tetrahedral or special tetrahedral, this vertices at infinity.
The ideal tetrahedron means that the tetrahedron, the vertex of tetrahedron, connect to the cusps, connect to the tunnel. Those small faces are triangulating the tunnel, which means all those tetrahedron.
Saying that's the definition of ideal triangulation.
Yes.
But then you use also ideal tetrahedron.
Right. Ideal tetrahedron are tetrahedron in this triangulation. You mean why we call that ideal?
It's an ideal tetrahedron is a tetrahedron with all vertices at infinity.
Yes. Tetrahedron. Yes. So right. Right. It's the same thing because you can have a hyperbolic geometry on this manifold, such that those defects are at infinity, and the ideal means that these are the infrared cutoff of the manifold.
The opposite dihedral angles are the same in an ideal tetrahedron, so that's not.
Yes, this is called Z double prime, and the other one is also the same Z double prime.
And that corresponds to the geometry you have. Well, I mean,
there are multiple ways to derive this. You can use hyperbolic geometry to derive this. You can also use flat connection. Yeah, the flat connection you compute.
I'm asking whether these dihedral angles are not necessarily the same as the dihedral angles in the tetrahedron you started with.
Dihedral angle. What dihedral angle I start with? I didn't really mention dihedral angle before. It's not the one in Lucan gravity. Of course, it's not.
Yeah. It's
something different. It's something different, yeah. Right.
But I mean, you can also use this language of Hegart. What you're doing is a Hegart splitting.
Yeah. Yes. Well, because the language that I learned from called ideal triangulation. So,
I'm a bit confused about this picture. So the blue part has five tetrahedra there, right?
The blue.
Yeah, this is a for simple.
Yes. So it. Okay.
Five
tetrahedra. So by visualize this graph, it naturally decomposes this manifold into five tetrahedra.
Place that so-called.
So these are the five tetrahedra probably you visualize.
Yeah, but where do you place that?
So what you visualize is a tetrahedron, but actually they are octahedron. That's the point. So I think the question is how exactly you produce this triangulation. This is very interesting. Yeah, because by viewing this diagram, using a look at these lines, it's naturally.
You're not triangulating this four simplex, or you're triangulating.
Four simplex. No, this is not four simplex. This is the three manifolds.
I know, but you removed the blue part.
That's right.
It's triangulating the complement.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I'm triangulating the complement, right? Right. And then, yes. And then you can naturally see there are tetrahedral regions in this three manifold, but those tetrahedral regions that these are I draw here, they are actually octahedrons. Yeah. So these the red ones.
How many tetrahedra you need to triangulate the complement?
How many? So okay. So there are 5 × 4. 20 for this triangulation. Right. Okay. Okay. All right. So now let's look at more details about this quantum dialogue function. Okay. And this quantum dialogue function is analytic in the upper half plane. And if we analytically continue this mu parameter, this is continuous parameter. The upper and to the complex plane, it's a meromorphic function. It's analytic in the upper half plane. All right, and then it's interesting to see the asymptotic behavior of this guy when mu goes to infinity and minus infinity, because we are going to do Fourier transform of this guy and compute the integral. And to understand finiteness, we have to understand the asymptotic behavior. Okay, and this is the equation for this asymptotic behavior. Is that if we consider 2 parameters alpha and beta, 2 real parameters alpha and beta, we can consider the following integral, okay? And we have the following properties. These are useful for finiteness. So if we have exponential minus 2 pi over k times beta times mu, multiply the quantum dialogue function, also shift mu by alpha. Well, now mu is real. We consider this mu is real. So yeah, mu plus I alpha, alpha is also real. And then it has this asymptotic behavior, yeah, like this. And when mu goes to infinity, and give this to mu to the minus infinity, and q is just a b plus b bar. Okay, by this asymptotic behavior, we see that this function is a Schwarz function of mu if alpha beta is inside an open triangle. And so, by look at this formula, and especially this formula in the bracket, we see that. Okay, so this is a Schwarz function if alpha beta is positive and also alpha plus beta smaller than q half. Okay. And this is a Schwarz function for those alpha beta, and this alpha beta is called a positive angle structure of this ideal tetrahedron. Okay. So this is an important concept. Okay, why we're interested in that? Because we are going to do the Fourier transform of this quantum dialogue function, and this function is convergent if the integration contour is shifted away from the real axis, while alpha is imaginary part of mu and beta is imaginary part of mu, okay, such that this alpha beta belongs to this open triangle, yeah, such that this alpha beta is a positive angle structure of this ideal tetrahedron. Okay, so therefore, I'm keep in mind that this positive angle, this ideal tetrahedron for Chern-Simons theory is dressed. Yeah. It's dressed by alpha beta, called positive angle structure. Okay, you can glue tetrahedron to form octahedron. Okay, and it's very easy because the octahedron partition function is just a product of 4 tetrahedron partition function, and there's a constraint. There's some constraint to constrain the last mu w. And relates to the previous 3, because the reason is that there is an internal edge in the gluing. Okay, and then you can do the same calculation, look at the asymptotic behavior from all these mu's, mu x, mu y, mu z, right? And again, put some exponential of beta, and this guy is a Schwarz function, okay, of mu x, mu y, mu z. If now you have 6 alphas, 6 alpha betas, alpha x beta x and alpha, yeah, okay, and if this you can also get a now it's not a triangle because it's higher dimensional, now it's open polytope. Okay, if those alpha betas belongs to a non-empty open polytope, okay, and then this alpha beta is a positive angle structure of the ideal octahedron, okay, and then this guy is a Schwarz function. Okay, and so this is indeed this open polytope is not empty because here you can draw a cross section of this open polytope. So here, this is a cross section. You can see that it's not empty. So there exists a positive angle structure for the ideal octahedron. Okay, and then there's a theorem proven by these guys that the partition function for the state integral model constructed in this way for SL2C Chan-Simon theory converge absolutely if the three manifold admit a positive angle structure. Yeah.
For any lambda, I mean, the two days for lambda here, or any lambda the cosmological constant?
Yeah. For any lambda, finite lambda.
Positive,
negative, right? Because the partition function depends on K, only on K. K is absolute value of lambda. Okay. And now you can follow this construction, construct the Chan-Simons partition function of this graph complement three manifold because it's just a five ideal octahedron glued. Okay, and in the end, the partition function is just certain Fourier transform acting on five copies of octahedron partition function. And and the result is a finite sum of 15 dimensional integrals, and this is what we call a state integral model. And those integrals are just for this Fourier transform. And in order to make them finite, that's why you need a positive angle structure. And you can show that the space of positive angle structures is indeed not empty because the positive angle structure of this three manifold is just five copies of positive angle structure of octahedron. Yeah? And this shows that by the theorem, it shows that this partition function converge absolutely. All right, so now we have the partition function for Chan-Simon theory as a finite dimensional integral and finite sum. All right, so now we need to impose simplicity constraint. So now let's look at this equation again. It shows the flux of B equals to magnetic flux of Chan-Simon's connection on the triangle. Okay, so once we have the flux of the Chan-Simon's connection on this triangle, we can compute the holonomy of flat connection along the boundary of this triangle. So I call it O. And this formula tells that this the holonomy of the flat connection around each defect is exponential of the flux of B, proportional to the lambda. Okay, so now we can impose the simplicity constraint to this holonomy. And this is a well-defined operator for Chan-Simon theory. Okay. So now let's impose a discrete simplicity constraint on each tetrahedron, what we usually call the linear simplicity constraint. It means that for any tetrahedron, there is a time-like normal n such that all the B field, all the bivector B, are orthogonal to this time-like normal for all tetrahedron phases. Okay. Then we impose this to this equation. So this means that this B field originally in the SL2C Lie algebra now restricted to a SU2 Lie algebra, subalgebra. Okay, it means that it restricts this holonomy to certain SU2 subgroup in SL2C. Okay, so then the simplicity constraint can be translated to be that near each node, all four holonomies of tetrahedron can be conjugate simultaneously to SU2 holonomy. Okay. Then we can give the definition for the simplicity constraint in this context that semiclassically the simplicity constraint restricts the moduli space of SL2C flat connection on four hole sphere to the ones that can be gauge transformed to SU2 flat connection. Yeah. Because for each tetrahedron, as I mentioned earlier, each tetrahedron here, you have a four hole sphere, you have a cavity to be your subway station, and the boundary of this cavity is a four-hole sphere. Yeah. And what you are constraining is the flat connection on this four-hole sphere. You are constraining the SL2C flat connection to the ones that can be gauge transformed to SU2 flat connections. Okay. You have a question?
I'm just saying the time.
Oh, okay. I do my time.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay. Yeah, okay, I have to. Right. So I'm doing my time not so well. All right. So now, this is we need to quantize this simplicity constraint. So as I said, this simplicity constraint has a first class component and second class component. The first class component are the eigenvalues of those holonomies. Okay. And the eigenvalues of holonomy has to be U1 because holonomy are SU2. Okay. And then it relates to the spin J are discrete and because of quantization of transimons. And there is important, there's a cutoff of J and it relates to K because the periodicity of this exponential. Right. And then these are really first class constraints because all those eigenvalues are mutually commutative in quantum transimon theory. You can compute the Poisson graph. Classically, Poisson bracket, they are commuting, they are commutative variables. And more specifically, the transimon partition function actually depends on those lambdas. You can just easily impose lambda, impose this constraint to the lambda, so this partition function depends on J, depends on the spin that we like. Okay. More, there's an interesting remark that you get this formula, you have to have a further restriction by asking 4D area equals to 3D area. Yeah, and this restriction actually give a restriction to the positive angle structure. And this is very interesting because it's kind of physics motivation give you a certain restriction to the mathematical structure that in this transimons construction. And this, this consistency also appeared earlier in the EPIL mode. All right, and then there's a second class constraint, which are really restricting the moduli space of SL2C flat connection on four whole sphere. And this is four real dimensions if you fix all the congruency class, if you fix all the eigenvalue of the holonomy. Okay, and this is a non-compact space, four real dimensions. The second class constraint restricts to moduli space of SU2 flat connections. It is two real dimension, it is compact space. So this is this semi-classically two second class simplicity constraint tells us. Okay, and this constraint has to be only imposed weakly because this is second class. This constraint constrains both position variable and also momentum variable. So these are really second class constraints. And what we do is firstly find some coherent state for the transimon theory. Yeah, if, and then express the transimon partition function in the coherent state basis. Okay. And here this label, the coherent state label rho, is a point in the moduli space where this coherent state is picked. Yeah, so this is a point in this SL2C moduli space. And then we are going, we are just imposing this semi-classical second class constraint to the coherent state label rho. Okay. And to restrict those coherent states into the space for SU2. And the resulting spin form vertex amplitude, because the transimons part is finite, so in the end, this vertex amplitude is a finite sum of absolutely convergent finite dimensional integrals. Yeah, this is well defined. Okay, and in practice, it's really not complicated because if you consider gluing four simplices, it amounts to just gluing three manifolds through those four whole spheres corresponding to tetrahedra. Okay, and it just looks like in the end, just looks like taking inner product of L2R times C to the power K. Yeah, so this is the integral you are going to deal with. And then what you do is just insert some delta function in the middle, okay, and then write this delta function, choosing some coherent state to rewrite the delta function as an integral of coherent state. And then you just restrict the integral, this rho integral to the compact moduli space of SU2 flat connection. This is not something complicated. Okay, and then you can get the full amplitude when you glue four simplices, or you have vertex amplitude, glue the vertex amplitude to all the four simplices. Okay, and also you you have to choose a certain phase amplitude and integrate over this label rho in the compact moduli space, okay, and summing over J. So here you can see that this J is cut off by the cosmological constant because there's a K. Yeah, as I showed earlier, yeah, because J always appears in the exponential in the phase. So there's a cutoff periodicity of J. Okay. And then there's a theorem that I can prove that this amplitude is finite, provided that the integration measure is regular on the compact moduli space. Yeah. So there's a little bit subtlety here because the SU2 flat connection has certain singularity. You have to require certain regularity of this measure near the singularity, okay. But you can always, there's always way to do that. Yeah, once this integral measure satisfies certain regularity, then this amplitude is finite.
Sorry, we have.
Yes. So now we wrap up. okay. So right. Yes, I'm going to skip this part about asymptotics, and the point is that it gives a nice semi-classical result. Okay. So now let's conclude. So all right. So in this talk, I talk about four-dimensional spinform amplitude with cosmology constant. Okay, it is constructed with state integral model of Chern-Simon theory. And the spinform amplitude constructed in this way are all finite. And this is part in the last slides I didn't talk, the semi-classical behavior of this amplitude reproduce four-dimensional Regge calculus with cosmology constant. So this model is nice in both perspective that it is finite and also has desired semi-classical behavior. Yeah. And that's why this model is so far the best, in that sense, it's the best four-dimensional analog of Turiaf-Virov model. Okay, and there are some interesting future perspective that we are actually working on. So firstly, is still to understand symplicity constraint. Okay, but this symplicity constraint in this game is actually is even more interesting than before, in the sense that it actually translates to a SL2C SU2 interface in topological quantum field theory. So this is the symplicity constraint actually gives an interface between SL2C Chern-Simon theory on the left and SU2K Chern-Simon theory on the right. Okay, and this interface are the four hole sphere that I talked earlier, and they are defect traveling through these interface leave holes on the sphere. Okay, on the left is SL2C Chern-Simon theory. It describes the four simplex. On the right is SU2 Chern-Simon theory. It describes the quantum tetrahedron in loop quantum gravity. Okay, and this interface tells us how these tetrahedron are boosted and glued into this four simplex. Yeah. And this is actually an analog of the Y map that we have for the usual spinform model. And recently I'm discussed a lot about it with David Gaiotto. Yeah, it turns out that it's very interesting that from David, from a very different perspective, but arrive at exactly the same problem for understanding the interface between SU2 Chern-Simon theory and SL2C Chern-Simon theory. But he has his own perspective. Yeah. He has his own motivation. But as you see, loop quantum gravity naturally also give the same interface. So this is something that we are actively studying to understand this interface. Okay, and the next thing is to understand the degree of divergence, because we know for the usual spinform model, people usually, it is divergent. People want to understand the degree of divergence, and people just put a cutoff of the spin and understand the divergence when you remove the cutoff. But now we have a natural cutoff given by the cosmological constant. Okay, so which means we should study the radiative corrections, understand the degree of divergence in the case of small cosmological constant. And my postdoc, Qiao Yun, she is actually working on this direction. Okay, and the next thing is, of course, apply the numerical computation. In the usual spinform model, we have to apply numerics to understand to do the calculation for the large triangulations. Okay, and in principle, all these calculations should be able to apply here to do the numerical computation for this model. Okay, I think that's all I want to say. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you very much. We are way over time and we had already a lot of discussion. So except if there is an urgent question right now, we can take it. And if not, I think also Monsieur is going to be like here around. So
yes.
Questions. So I don't know if there is an urgent question. And if not, I think we can just thank Michel for his talk. Thank you very much.
Thank you.